Big show for you here today. It is free agency recap with Justin Boone. So much has happened in the first 2 days of NFL free agency. Yeah, we don't have to legal tampering, negotiating window. Free agency started on Monday, okay? So we are going to break that down here on the pod. Kenneth Walker to the Kansas City Chiefs. Alec Pierce staying with the Colts. Mike Evans to the San Francisco 49ers. How excited can we get about all of these moves? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball because so many things have happened. Free agency, it is currently happening as we are speaking, and joining me today to break it all down, to talk a little ball, it is our guy, Justin Boone. Boone, what's going on, buddy?
I'm back, baby. After the combine, we got to hang out, got to have some fun. Then I came back from the trip, got totally sick last week, battled through. Like, late in the week, I still updated my Dynasty Trade Value charts. I did some work, but I was down for the count last week, man. So we had to miss the show we were going to do. You found a replacement. Shout out to Joel for stepping in for me there. And then now this week, this is the start of it. Like, we talk about like the different points in the fantasy calendar. Free agency is the time when you can officially start to get excited. You start to get a feel for what rosters are going to look like the next season. This is when it all begins, and we've been cranking out a ton of content over the last 24 hours or so here, and there is still a bunch more to come for the rest of the week.
No question. We do need to, at some point, address your immune system. We need to get that going here. Listen, just because you spend an entire week in Indianapolis, probably drinking more than you normally do, and definitely staying out later in more crowded spaces than you're usually in, that does not give you an excuse, Boone, to come back and be like, I'm sick for an entire week. So we got to work on that.
I'm blaming it on the connecting flights, man. I was on four flights that week. You're just locked in that tube with a ton of people. That's what I'm pointing it at. Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, I had connecting flights as well. Okay, so, but again, we'll address that off air, because while you are trying to get better in terms of your immune system, the NFL as a whole is trying to get better here in free agency by adding players to these specific rosters. And we are going to break it all down here. We're going to take as much time to unpack all of these news items, everything that we've got here. Here's the structure of the show as we're going to go through today. First segment, we're going to talk through wide receivers. Second segment, we're going to do quarterbacks and tight ends. Then we've got running backs. And then we're going to wrap it up with a little offensive line moves that matter. We actually just had a piece of news come in as the Colts former offensive tackle Braden Smith is signing with the Texans, who need some offensive line help. So we will address those at the end of the show. But let's waste no more time. Let's get into it here. And let's start at the wide receiver position, where Alec Pierce is staying with the Indianapolis Colts. He lands a four-year contract, $114 million to stay in Indianapolis, $84 million in guaranteed, $60 million at signing. Big deal for the Colts to keep Alec Pierce. We'll talk about the subsequent move, trading Michael Pittman to the Pittsburgh Steelers after this. But Boone, I'm kind of surprised. I thought there was a pretty good chance that if he got to the open market, he would bolt and he would go elsewhere. But Pierce staying in Indianapolis, what's your reaction to this big move?
I mean, all the moves all together with Pittman leaving, it definitely is a positive for him and a positive for a couple other guys on the roster too, right? Josh Downs, who we'll talk a bit about here, I'm sure. We both really like him. This potentially opens up things for him. Ty Warren at tight end, a guy who was crushing it last year before he got hurt later in the season. Now, again, he's another guy who's going to have more opportunity in this offense with Pittman gone. So the fact that they're willing to invest in him like this and Pierce, that's great. I still have my doubts though, Harmon. Like, I don't know. Is he a true number one receiver? They definitely think so based on the way they're paying him and the effort that they went to try to keep him there. But this is a guy that went over 1,000 yards last year, did it on 47 catches. And he's always going to be, to an extent, that type of player. And I think we can look at it and say, okay, with Pittman gone, maybe the efficiency goes down a little bit. He's not going to be quite as efficient as last year, but he's going to get that uptick in targets. So fantasy-wise, kind of keeps him in the same range, but I feel like I'm approaching him with a bit of caution here. I still see him as like a wide receiver three, bit of a boomer bust guy, but the guy that does have a really big weekly ceiling.
yeah, that big weekly ceiling is still 100% going to be present here. And I think you could talk a lot about this move from just an NFL perspective. I mean, he now, from an average salary standpoint, is between he's between Brandon Ayuk and Terry McLaurin, but obviously Ayuk is going to be off the 49ers roster literally any minute now. So we'll say he's between Amon-Ra St. Brown and Terry McLaurin. Do I think Alec Pierce is in that tier of wide receiver? I don't think so. I think there's some parts of his game that's analogous with Terry McLaurin, but I think McLaurin's probably more of a full field player. But that's just like, the salary is what it is. You know, when you get to the open market, you're going to push for higher than you're theoretically worth. That's going to come up with almost all of these pass catchers here when we get to it, frankly, even some of the other positional players as well. But that just is what it is. I think for Pierce's standpoint, like, I know there's like a temptation to, man, he could have been Drake May's, you know, number one wide receiver. He could have been on the other end of those very impressive Drake May vertical passes. I just, the grass is not always greener. You know, I think it's good for Pierce, if you're invested in him, to stay with the coaching staff and the system and where he's already had some success, especially because he's a specific archetype of receiver. But like, and to that point, Boone, like, remember when we were talking about like Cortland Sutton during the year and Troy Franklin, you know, out targeting him at times. And my point was like, you know, the narrative is Troy Franklin has become the number one receiver in Denver. It's like, he's not the number one receiver in Denver. Conceptually, Cortland Sutton is still set up to be the number one player there. But when you got a quarterback playing in chaos, like the vertical X receiver who's almost always running perimeter routes, which is what Sutton is, and it is what Pierce will remain. I don't think his role is going to change very much, even with Pittman out the door. Like, he's probably still going to stay in that role. That guy is just susceptible to chaos and volatility. And I think that will still be the case for Pierce because, you know, they kept Daniel Jones around, have the Indianapolis Colts. And I just think that we've seen more chaos from Jones than steady play. So I don't know that I'm just going to copy paste like what happened in the first 8 weeks of the season for the Colts through a full game through a full season. That seems a little foolish to me. So I think we're probably going to land on the same place from a ranking standpoint with Alec Pierce. Good for him to stay here, but I wouldn't then, like, this idea that he's now going to get 8 to 10 targets a game, I'm not sure that from an archetype standpoint, he can really be that guy.
I do want to say, though, like, he's definitely improved over the last couple of years. I feel like often I'm throwing a bit of cold water on him because the type of receiver that he is. But last year, top 25 fantasy wideout over the final 11 weeks. I still think he's going to be a valuable piece in fantasy. And we talk about it all the time. You don't need your receivers to go out there and be the most consistent guys. If they do have that big ceiling, that's great. And having him in your roster, as long as he's going to come ADP wise as like a wide receiver 3 with those boom weeks, that's fantastic. I do think it's very interesting for Josh Downs, though. And one of the things we have to see is, who are they going to get to be that number 3 receiver in the offense now? Or are they going to give Downs a chance to potentially earn more of a role, play a little more outside? I think we both agree that he has that skill set. He could potentially do it. And yet they haven't really given him that opportunity. So fingers crossed that they do finally give him that shot. And I don't know who else is out there that they could potentially bring in to be the number 3 guy. Maybe they'll look to the draft. But right now, I think Downs is in a position where he could be a pretty sneaky fantasy ad, though we've been saying that for a couple of years now.
Right. And Downs' best moments from a, I think, real life standpoint, a fantasy standpoint, was in his second season when Michael Pittman, who we're going to talk about in just a moment, was dealing with a back injury for most of that year. That's when like his targets per route really spiked up, his efficiency spiked up. I think that Downs can benefit in that way, but don't want to go too far yet to say like, oh, it's Josh Downs' season, because what I would guess happens here is that the Colts probably spend another day 2 draft pick at the wide receiver position, because obviously Pittman's out. They bailed on A.D. Mitchell midway through last year, but that's typically how they've addressed this room. They've wanted to draft and develop. And by the way, like, it's worked. Like, all of these guys have been, obviously the A.D. Mitchell thing didn't really work out for various reasons, but for the most part, like, drafting and developing Pierce worked. Drafting and developing Michael Pittman, Josh Downs, like, that all worked. And I've always been kind of higher than consensus on all of these guys. And now I think it is probably Downs and Pierce going forward as the top 2 guys, but who they add in the draft, I think will decide like whether Downs is probably more of just like a, you know, a bi-week filler type player in fantasy, or whether he can truly have that breakout season. Cause yeah, you're right. I totally agree. From a talent standpoint, he can absolutely be that guy.
And I know we have a lot of guys to talk about today, so we can't just, you know, stay on this one player in this one team. But still, I want to bring up and I want to, you know, hammer the point home. Tyler Warren at tight end. This makes him a lot more interesting. Last year, the tight end 6 in fantasy points per game through the first 10 weeks. I think he could be a guy. He has that top 5 upside. We're always looking for guys that could get more opportunity. What if it's not Downs? What if it is Warren who becomes that like de facto number 2 pass catcher in the offense? That could put him in a position where he's having, you know, a meaningful impact on fantasy like he was at the beginning of last year.
Shoot, he could lead this team in targets, I think. With Pierce, if he remains kind of in that volatile X receiver bucket, he could be a guy that gets like 100 to 110 type of targets, and then maybe Warren is, I'm just doing, you know, fake math off the top of my head, but like, yep, he could be 120 type guy, and Downs could, again, like kind of live in that role, but it does depend on who they add. But I think the reason that they were able to move off of Michael Pittman, and we can transition to that one here, is because they have a lot of faith in Tyler Warren. I think they have a lot of faith in Josh Downs taking that step forward. And by the way, like, all of these Colts bets might end up being wrong here. I don't want to like just say that they're absolutely on the right path, because I'm still pretty skeptical about what the quarterback plan is going forward. But yes, on Pittman, this is kind of something we've been talking about on the show for a couple of months now, that there was a pretty good chance they were going to choose essentially Alec Pierce over Michael Pittman. That is what they have done here, as they send the 29-year-old Michael Pittman to the Pittsburgh Steelers, basically a late draft pick swap, essentially to get rid of Michael Pittman's salary, send him to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh immediately signs him to a 3-year deal worth $59 million, just under $20 million average per year salary. I love this move for Pittsburgh, Boone, mostly because I think they get a credible starting outside receiver. You know, the narrative was always, oh, Pittsburgh, just every single wide receiver draft pick they make, it always works out. It ain't been working out lately, or because they were able to get these guys at values, they've had to send them away because of the character issues or whatever, it wasn't a fit anymore. So they get Michael Pittman in here after trading DK Metcalf. I think there's a chance Michael Pittman could outproduce DK Metcalf in fantasy this year, because I was charting Michael Pittman for reception perception last night. And it just dawned on me, and I know that, like, listen, it brings me no pleasure to report this. I think he might be a perfect Aaron Rodgers receiver at this point in his career. We can kind of unpack that, but my first reaction here was, I really like Pittman going to Pittsburgh. He fits with the type of receiver they need across from DK Metcalf. So reaction from you on Michael Pittman going to Pittsburgh.
This one might have the biggest disparity between like real life and fantasy, because I agree with you. Real life for Pittsburgh, absolute slam dunk. They finally solved that number 2 receiver position, which last year was like Calvin Austin and Roman Will. They just couldn't get it right. Now they get a guy that they can absolutely trust. And yet from a fantasy perspective, isn't this just kind of bad news all around? Like, yeah, maybe he will outproduce Metcalf. But what are we going to see from these guys? Like, we're looking at them now as like, last year Metcalf was like a wide receiver 3 for fantasy and he didn't have any competition. Now you bring in Pittman, who his best years have been as like a volume guy. So he definitely can command targets. But man, I don't know. This does not seem exciting for fantasy, and it makes me want to stay away from both these guys now. I just don't think it's going to happen, barring some sort of injury. I think it's going to be pretty rough from a fantasy perspective, regardless who the quarterback is. If they bring back Rodgers, like, it's going to be, I don't know, it's going to be bad. And I think very frustrating for fantasy, and anyone who sees those names, household guys, like, okay, yes, absolutely got them in my lineup, got them at a value in my draft. You're not going to enjoy having them in your lineup week to week though.
Oh, let me be super clear here. When I say that, again, I'm just throwing numbers out randomly. I have no idea where you're going to rank these guys. I'm going to rank these guys, where people are going to draft these guys. But let's just say, like, because of name brand value and, you know, whatever, DK Metcalf goes off the board as wide receiver 30 or something like that, and Michael Pittman ends up as wide receiver 42. Let's just throw random numbers out here. I could see a scenario where Michael Pittman finishes as wide receiver 33 and DK Metcalf finishes as wide receiver 35. So if anything, it means like probably don't draft DK Metcalf, but I'm not saying like, oh boy, bump Michael Pittman up your rankings. But I just think that if I'm thinking about an Aaron Rodgers offense at this point, with Mike McCarthy in the mix here now as well, it's going to look different than what it did last year from a schematic standpoint, from a personnel package standpoint. You know, like, what Rodgers wants is he wants guys that can separate quickly so he can get the ball out. And he wants these guys that are going to be in the short to intermediate area and be where you're supposed to be against zone coverage. Like, that just has never really been DK Metcalf's game, even if they had a couple of moments last year. But that is Michael Pittman's game. My one worry with Pittman as an individual player, I think he kind of slowed down as the year went on. So that's something that, like, maybe it's a big September for Michael Pittman. I could totally see that. Like, just 29-year-old receiver, he's kind of taking a lot of pounding because he does get a lot of those layup targets. But I like the move for Pittsburgh. I'm with you from a fantasy standpoint. I'm not getting all jacked up about anything that's happening in Pittsburgh, especially if Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback here. Let's go to the next wide receiver signing, and let's talk about Wan'Dale Robinson. Boone, Wan'Dale Robinson signs with the Tennessee Titans. 4 years, $78 million, $38 million guaranteed for Wan'Dale Robinson to reunite with Brian Daboll. This is the one that, like, everybody saw coming. And here we go. It happened. Wan'Dale Robinson signs with Tennessee. Any reactions to this one?
Yeah, the worst kept secret in free agency, right? We knew this one was coming for a while here. And I think it's interesting. Like, we've talked about Wan'Dale Robinson many times on the show. You go back a couple years ago, the 93 catch, 699 yard season, right? He only had three touchdowns. That was like the definition of your, you know, Mickey Mouse PPR scam, all that sort of stuff. Last year, we at least saw some bigger games from him. You can argue, you know, the matchups might have been a little easier in some of those games, but he did have 300 yard games and had a more respectable end of the year stat line. 92 catches, went over 1,000 yards, had four touchdowns. So became a little more interesting for fantasy. Actually finished the year as the wide receiver 21 in fantasy points per game. I could see something similar now in this environment, because the one thing that he is going to get in Tennessee is volume, right? They need someone to come in. They did not have a true number one receiver, and I don't think he is necessarily a true number one receiver, but he is going to get a ton of volume. He is going to get opportunity there. He has the familiarity with Daboll. I think Cam Ward is a better quarterback than what we saw last year. So I think this offense is going to be a little better, a little more improved. And I think Wan'Dale is not going to be somebody that's going to, like, win you your league by any means. But again, maybe a little bit like the Pittman thing, a guy that I think you're going to draft and get some value on, because I think he's going to finish a little higher than where people are going to take him because of all the times that you've called him that PPR scam. I think the general public perception on him is fairly low, and yet he's going to go to this situation where right now, depending who they draft, he could potentially be the guy in that passing attack, and you have to look at him for fantasy and consider him as somebody that you're going to want to have in your lineup and maybe another career year ahead.
Are you saying this is my fault? Like, I'm bringing down the Wan'Dale Robinson discourse?
I mean, not in a bad way necessarily. If you're creating that value, then I'm all for it. We should do this more often. We should, like, pick a guy in the offseason and just totally talk him down, get the ADP low, and then go profit on him.
Unethical. Unethical behavior by Justin Boone.
I would never.
We would never do that. No, but Wan'Dale Robinson, though, I'm with you that I think, look, from a fit standpoint, we can just go ahead and copy paste a lot of what we saw. I think especially last year, if you want to be optimistic for Wan'Dale Robinson, where they essentially took his Mickey Mouse route tree from 2024 and earlier in his career and said, hey, what if we just threw him like a deep post or a deep over every now and again? Which, by the way, that's what Wan'Dale Robinson was doing back at Kentucky as a prospect with Liam Cohen back in that offense. Like, he was more of it was just everything underneath. Like I said, Mickey Mouse gadgety stuff, and then just rip it deep on a post or a corner route. And Wan'Dale did that last year. That's how he kind of split the difference between his very low average depth of target and then what it was in 2025. I think they'll do that here in this offense. It's a very spread out offense in what I'm imagining it to be with Brian Daboll there in Tennessee. Shotgun heavy. They're, you know, going to get him ripping down the field in that way. And yeah, there's just a huge target vacuum here. And I will say, like, Jackson Dart, he'll let it rip on some of those big in-breaking routes. So will Cam Ward if the pass protection is there. So I agree. Wandale's not going to win you your league or anything, but if you're drafting like in best ball and you're looking for like a cheap, you know, just kind of compiler, I think he can get that done. For me, like, when I have given him this contract, I don't know who really cares. Like, you may have cut off Chimiri DK's path to development here, because I kind of think they should be deployed pre-snap in the same ways. But Tennessee's a blank slate wide receiver room. They're probably not done at wide receiver. I almost would be surprised if they don't make more moves in the NFL draft coming up here. But yeah, worst kept secret in the league was that Wan'Dale Robinson was going to follow Brian Daboll to Tennessee. It is what's happened here.
Yeah, we almost have to, talking about the contracts, like grade them on a bit of a curve. Like, we're looking at the money, but the salary cap's gone up so much. Like, teams have a lot of money to spend out there. So I think you got to look at it and at least factor that in a little bit, that teams, they have a lot of money in their pocket. It's probably burning a hole, especially when you're one of the weaker teams in the league.
Tennessee especially.
The Titans that has, a huge need at that spot, too. They had to come away with somebody. And this is the guy they got. And they're probably, you know, struggling a little bit in terms of some of the higher end free agents wanting to go there. They've gotten a few guys, but when you're trying to get those big name free agents, how many guys are looking at Tennessee, right? Not really a contender. So I think we got to factor all that in when we're considering the contracts.
Yeah, like I said, it's fine. It's not bad. It's not, oh my God, what a steal. It's probably fine. You're paying for a little bit of certainty, which if you're Tennessee, I totally don't mind if you're paying for some certainty. We buried the lead here. One of the biggest wide receiver moves of the offseason so far has been Mike Evans leaving Tampa Bay. Jason Light's first ever draft pick all the way back in 2014 for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers has left Tampa Bay. The 32-year-old, he'll be 33 this season. He turns 33 in August, just like your boy, is headed to San Francisco to play with the San Francisco 49ers. Boone, I love this fit. I'm really curious where you think he's going to land in your fantasy rankings, because I would just say from a real life standpoint, it's a perfect match. Mike Evans is, I think we saw the first signs of decline for him last year, just a little bit, not like going off the cliff. I do think he has the two trump cards you want for an aging receiver. One, he came into the NFL as a true freak athlete. So him as a diminished form of himself is still probably better than most receivers from an athletic standpoint. Plus, he has developed into an elite technician over the years, which I never think he gets enough credit for. So he has that trump card to age pretty well, too. Obviously, there's always a risk with, you know, 33-year-old receivers. We just don't see that going on very often, especially a guy who's dealt with injuries over the last few years. But elsewhere, like, he is perfectly suited to Kyle Shanahan's X receiver position. The routes that he lines up best with, I put the route chart of Brandon Ayuk 2023, like where they were using him to Mike Evans's route tree last year. It perfectly overlaps. So there would have been teams where I thought Evans actually probably would not fit all that well just at this point in his career, like running too many vertical go routes. But those in-breaking routes, like dig routes and stuff over the middle of the field, he's perfectly suited to do that. I think he'll crush it here. I think his addition is good news for Ricky Pearsall to kind of move around the formation as well. So I'm all sunshines and rainbows with this Mike Evans to San Francisco deal. Do you feel differently? Like, where do you think about him from a fantasy standpoint?
No, I think he's certainly a winner going there. And you mentioned it, like the Shanahan offense, basically any time they've asked a receiver to be their top receiver, and they've had to ask a bunch of different guys, even this past season, right? All the injuries, the Ayuk situation, we saw Juwan Jennings have to step up. We saw Pearsall have to step up. We even saw like Kendrick Bourne having big games. We saw DeMarcus Robinson having big games. Like anytime the injuries occurred, no matter who that number one receiver is, they normally do well for fantasy. So to put Mike Evans out there with the talent that he definitely still has, there's still juice left in the tank, I am excited about it. Now, I'm docking him in my rankings, and a couple of things you touched on there, right? One is the age. We're going into the age 33 season, which is a little bit scary. And it's especially scary when you think of the durability concerns. I went back, Carmen, and I looked. He's dealt with a hamstring injury 6 straight seasons.
Oh, yeah.
Missed a variety of time, played through it some of the time. But it has been there that long. This is a chronic injury that he has dealt with. There have been other injuries along the way as well, but those things tend to pop up a little more the older you get. And yes, he's transitioned his game. He's a technician, all that sort of stuff. But he's also like a big bodied receiver. And I feel like in general, those guys don't tend to age that well. And sometimes they can completely fall off that cliff. So I'm kind of baking all that in and keeping him down around like wide receiver 30, more of that wide receiver 3 range. Of course, there's upside when he's on the field. He will probably give you wide receiver 2 value. So you're going to have to take that into account. But I'm a little bit worried that the injuries are going to be an issue. And forget all the jokes about the 49ers and all the injuries like that, because he was dealing with this before he got there. So right. I think that's a bit of a concern. It also doesn't scare me away from Ricky Pearsall at all, like you mentioned. I think some people looked at this and said, okay, Mike Evans is now there and he's the number one and now Pearsall the opportunity. No, Ricky Pearsall can still perform well. They had to go out and get somebody, right? George Kittle is going to be dealing with an injury early in the season. We're not 100% sure when he's going to be back. Aiyuk gone. Jennings probably going to be gone. He's in free agency. So we will see what happens here. But bringing in Mike Evans does not immediately kill Ricky Pearsall's value. In fact, I have him in a similar range, slightly below where I have Evans, but in a similar range as like that wide receiver three flex option with some upside.
I mean, my God, the amount of substation memes the producers have just thrown in my face during Boone's monologue here. I'm this close to breaking. But you're right. Regardless of whether you believe in this electrical substation conspiracy theories or it's just like, hey, the 49ers maybe have the worst training staff, whatever you want to say, okay? The 49ers have just been, or maybe it's just bad luck. That's also very much part of it, too. It's a physical sport, bad luck. They've drafted a lot of guys who've dealt with injuries. Like, regardless, San Francisco players have had bad luck with injuries, and Mike Evans has had bad luck with injuries, if you want to just call it that. So that is without a question a risk. I'll probably come in a little bit higher than that on Mike Evans, because I think the path to him being Devontae Adams for the Rams last year is just so easy to say. Like, even if he is a 750, 800 yard receiver, he could still catch 10 to 12 touchdowns because they just go to him over and over again, which will be an interesting conversation about like Christian McCaffrey's touchdown upside. Like, these are things we can parse out over the course of the summer. But, you know, I do agree with you that like there's risk involved here. And for Ricky Pearsall, like, they were going to add somebody. And the fact that it is an on-ball vertical receiver, I think it's going to allow Pearsall to slip back into the role that he was originally designed for, how they were using him as a rookie, you know, someone that could move around the formation, not just run those deeper clear out routes. So I think, again, good news for Pearsall, who the team is still very high on, his teammates still believe in. Like, this is somebody I'm still absolutely really willing to invest in this year. The Mike Evans addition, that like that already should have been baked in, that it was going to be somebody as like a big perimeter receiver who can actually, again, allow Pearsall to move around a little bit more. And just like, Evans is going to be a huge upgrade on what Juwan Jennings was for this team last year. So I think it's good for the offense as a whole.
And low-key, a really positive development for Brock Purdy too. We saw how well he finished the year, and yes, they had an easy schedule and all that sort of stuff, but when I was working on the rankings the last couple months and you thought about all the uncertainty at receiver and you thought about George Kittle's injury, it was very easy to start moving Purdy down kind of into that high-end QB2 range. I think this addition immediately puts him back up into the top 12, into the low-end QB1 ranks, and continues to make him somebody that I think is going to be a target in fantasy drafts.
All right, I want to get to some breaking news that happened just a few minutes ago into the show. Romeo Doubs signed with the New England Patriots. According to Ian Rapoport, it's a four-year, is it $70 million deal for Romeo Doubs? $80 million deal for Romeo Doubs here. So we're still finding out, obviously, all of these contracts are, you know, fake news. Even Mike Evans's deal, it's like really a one-year $14 to $16 million deal, even though it's 3 years. Like, the money is what it is. It just shows some level of commitment. But I like this move for New England here, Boone. I don't know if it's going to be a fantasy needle mover, but it's a guy that's going to be able to take some outside receiver reps for New England.
It feels like a bit of a consolation prize, though, doesn't it? Like, the last 2 years, the Patriots have been in the market to try to get that like true number one guy. Last year, they sort of like came around the back door and ended up getting Stephon Diggs and slow playing it when he was coming off the injury early in the season and got really good production out of him. You know, they missed on Chris Godwin, who they tried to get last year, this year, and maybe they are still in the market for an AJ Brown. But to me, this kind of looks like they were trying to get one of the top guys and they kind of had to settle for Romeo Doubs, because, again, I don't think he's like a real needle mover for fantasy. He will have some big games. He'll be elevated a bit by playing with Drake May. And yet I still see Doubs as what he was with the Packers, which is that player that's going to go out and score a couple touchdowns 1 week and then be basically nothing for the next month after that. It's going to be very sporadic in terms of his production. And I don't know that he's that much of an upgrade on what they already had there. Like, it's really disappointing to me that this is all they're coming away with for Drake May.
Yeah, look, I think the draft was always going to be the answer for the Patriots in terms of, you know, I had a Patriots fan tweet me today, like, can you explain the Patriots' obsession with wide receiver threes and their lack of interest in getting an elite wide receiver one. I was like, well, I did a whole breakdown for my YouTube channel on this. Like, if you're going into free agency saying we got to get a number one wide receiver, you're going to be disappointed. Those guys don't exist. The only guy who could be an elite number one receiver that's signing for agency is Mike Evans, because he's 33 years old. And by the way, like, I don't think New England, from a what they want of their X receiver, would fit Mike Evans in the same way that a Shanahan X receiver route tree would as well. So I don't even know that I would have loved that fit necessarily. So, and again, that's no lock. Evans is 33 years old. You know, he's probably a future Hall of Famer, but like, that's it. Okay, like Alec Pierce is not a number one. Even if he would have been the top receiver on the depth chart, he's not a number one receiver. You know, all these guys are not. Like, again, it's easier to, I'd love to find an elite number one receiver. They're not just growing on trees for you to go pluck them off there. Like, so getting Dobbs, who maybe is an acceptable two or a really good three, I think is fine for New England. And I'll be really interested to see if Dobbs coming in and playing as the outside on the ball, like traditional X receiver type, does it allow Kayshon Booty to move around? Like, Kyle Williams was kind of pigeonholed as an X receiver last year. We'll see if he can play different roles for this team. I know they're still really excited about Kyle Williams, or at least that's what they've said publicly. So, yeah, I think they'll probably add somebody in the NFL draft, maybe late in the first round, maybe on day two. It's not exciting. It's not sexy, but it's not the worst thing in the world. And unfortunately, like, I think the Diggs thing, like, they were moving on from him because of the legal issues that he is facing. I think that's a big part of why he's not on the team anymore.
And maybe I'm impacted by being a Bills fan and watching kind of how Buffalo's addressed the receiver position the last couple of years, and this kind of having that same feel of like these underwhelming free agent signings.
Dobbs is better than like Josh Palmer or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the, like, Buffalo was shooting way too low. I hear you. There's scar tissue there, but that's just like a totally different tier to me.
Yeah, agreed. But still, I think they need to find that guy. And yes, it's very difficult to do that. And maybe they'll be able to look to the draft and get somebody there. So they might not be done yet. But for the time being, it just feels underwhelming. And yet still, it's another weapon for Drake May. And this, you know, takes Drake May probably out of that pocket of guys who were, you know, fantasy fallers, because I start to look at it and go, okay, they're not getting him any more help and they're going to lose Diggs. And I'm putting together, you know, winners and losers, risers and fallers right now. And I started to consider Drake May as potentially a guy who could be a faller. I think this at least stops that. I still hope they go and do something else. They got to get more weapons for him. So yes, a little bit underwhelming, a great landing spot for Dobbs, could maximize his value. And yet I still question how high his ceiling could be, probably at most as a wide receiver three flex option in my mind.
Yeah, I think with any of these free agent deals beyond, obviously, Mike Evans, different consideration, but even for like Wandale or Romeo Dobbs, you're hoping that that guy can like hold the line for 2 years, and then whoever you've drafted and developed is ready to step up and be like the next version of that in 2 years. That's what you're hoping in an ideal world, that they're not like hoping, okay, this is Drake May's number one receiver for the rest. That's the problem with Buffalo, is that the guys that they wanted, like the young guy that they wanted to step up, obviously did not step up. Hopefully for New England, this goes in a different direction. Three more wide receiver deals just to group in that I think matter a little bit to varying degrees. Rashid Shaheed returns to Seattle on a 3-year deal. Jahan Dotson, yes, what is dead may never die. He goes to the Atlanta Falcons. One of the lightest wide receiver depth charts in the league, Boone. Just saying. 2-year deal for Jahan Dotson going to Atlanta.
Did I not text you when he signed? I texted you immediately. Listen, all the dynasty shares I had Dotson. We still both believe, like, it's been a while. There were flashes during that rookie season. There was 7 touchdowns during that rookie season. We get to still say that he was a former first round pick, all that sort of stuff, as you try to hold on to hope. But yeah, the main thing here is that he'll have an opportunity with the Falcons. Whether it will turn into anything, it's still a long shot. We're talking about more of a dynasty stash. And yet, totally, the window is like just slightly open for him to potentially come through and do something in Atlanta. You know, not necessarily maybe what Darnell Mooney did there a couple years ago, but you could see him become that number two pass catcher in the offense, that number two receiver. Maybe, but it's still definitely a long shot. Rashid Shaheed, I think there's more of a ceiling for Shaheed than what we saw last year. And yes, he made an impact on that offense. He made an impact on that team, especially on special teams in the Super Bowl run. But I keep coming back to, like, what was he doing in the first half of the year when he was with the Saints? Wide receiver 21 in fantasy points per game through 5 weeks in 2024. Posted 6 top 20 receiver finishes in 2023. And then last year, before he got dealt, he was like a wide receiver 3 flex option completely yeah. boomer bust guy, but let's give him a full offseason here to get comfortable there. Maybe they work him into the offense more. I think there is potentially something there, and it makes me very sad for my guy or our guy, Torrey Horton. I had high hopes for him. I still hope he can come through, but bringing back Shahid, you know, maybe makes that a little less exciting.
Yeah, that maybe makes that like a year three, year four, if it ever happens type of thing for Torrey Horton, yeah. which is just tough. I mean, that's what's going to happen when you fall in the draft because of injury concerns and then you get hurt in your rookie year. Like it makes it tough for like, hey, we're just going to walk into the year with Torrey Horton as our number two or number three receiver. We'll see. Also interested to see if Shahid can just play more than Cooper Kupp this year, because that did not happen down the stretch of last season. And like you said, it's just tough. Like the history of receivers changing teams in the middle of the season, it's not all that great. That's why like what Jacoby Myers did for the Jags was so huge, right? Like that's a pretty big one. So again, definitely just hoping to see more from Shahid, but we shall see. On the other end of it too, just the last one of like just wide receiver deals that I think are interesting. Jalen Naylor going to the Raiders on a 3-year deal. Naylor was a guy that I charted like right at Sunday night. So, like, thank God he ended up being signed on the first day of free agency. He has some interesting pieces to him, Boone. He wins on outbreaking routes. He was really good at the catch point last year, can block and play all three receiver positions. So, that's a nice add for a Raiders team that's kind of starting over at wide receiver. Don't know if it's going to be a fantasy factor, but we're interested in who's going to be lining up at wide receiver for the Raiders, just because Fernando Mendoza, number one overall pick, Clint Kubiak, new play caller there. So, I'm with you. I think all three of these guys will make impacts. We just have to see how much of a role they hold, but I'm glad that you were with me that we can have a little candle still lit for Jahan Dotson. You brought up Darnell Mooney. Like, nobody expected Darnell Mooney to be good for that Falcons team across from Drake London. And then he had a really nice season in his first year there. So maybe there's just some hope for Jahan Dotson. Boone didn't discourage me. He allowed me to have the moment here, which is all that matters.
Well, and I have seen him dropped in many dynasty leagues, and I've picked him up on those waiver wires and placed him on my bench for exactly this moment. So we are hoping, Harmon.
All right, we are hoping. There you go. I realized this week, actually, that when the Dotson thing, when it happened, somebody replied, like, I associate this guy with you more than any other receiver. I was like, you know, I think it's good for fun. It's bad for business. Like, I think I tweet more about the guys that I loved that didn't work out than the players that I like actually really like who end up being really good. So again, good for fun, maybe bad for business. We will consult with the attorneys and the lawyers and the PR folks on that one. For now, we're going to take our first quick break. We come back. We're talking through quarterback moves. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we are back. It's time to talk some quarterbacks. And of course, Boone, we go live here at 2 p.m. Eastern. Like, nothing's happened all day. And then as soon as we go on the stream here, like three or four things happen. Classic. One of those things that happened is that Geno Smith has been traded to the New York Jets, back where he started. What a great Photoshop that Adam Schefter worked up here as we are on the stream on this one. The Jets get Geno Smith at a 7th-round pick. The Raiders get a 6th-round pick here, so it is a late-round pick swap. Geno goes back where it all began, baby. New York Jets quarterback Geno Smith. I mean, I guess it could have been worse for Garrett Wilson and your boy A.D. Mitchell. I guess it could have been worse.
I mean, Geno's better than what we saw last year, is he not? I mean, that was about as bad of an environment as it could be, with, you know, the offensive coordinator change mid-season, all the stories that we've heard come out from there, the struggles of the offensive line. So I think he is better than that, but he's going to this Jets offense where, are we hopeful about this Jets offense? I'm really not. I think this is often where it seems like quarterback careers go to die. And I would be worried about Geno Smith going there and having a chance to potentially rebound after a down year. So, yeah, fantasy-wise, it at least gives them a guy who I think could be competent and maybe get something out of Garrett Wilson. But again, it feels like we're going to end this season, Harmon, and it's just going to be another year where we're saying, can we get Garrett Wilson a quarterback? Can we find this guy a real quarterback that can unlock his potential? I don't know if Geno Smith is going to be that guy in the environment that's currently constructed in New York.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to be optimistic, like, the Jets offensive line is actually way better than what
for sure
he was playing behind with the Raiders last year. And yeah, I mean, Geno was probably like the stone worst quarterback in the NFL last year. I think he could maybe be like the 22nd best quarterback in the NFL in the right environment. I don't know that this is that environment, but I think, again, it could have been worse for, I mean, they're trying to sign Carson Wentz as the backup. And for at one point last week, I thought they were just going to have Carson Wentz start all season for him. I actually have no idea what the Jets are doing, by the way. Like, they've spent a lot of money on some like older defensive free agents. I can't quite understand what this team is at this point. And again, like the Frank Reich offensive coordinator part of this all, that leaves a lot to be desired, in my opinion. So, yeah, I think, again, my overall thought when I saw this, and it was reported a couple days ago that, hey, Geno was probably going back to the Jets, or that he was at the top of their wish list, which what a statement in the year 2026. My just thought was, hey, it could be worse for Garrett Wilson and A.D. Mitchell. So I don't think that you can sell this as a positive move, but it's probably not an outright negative move either for those guys. Let's go to some of the bigger fish at quarterback. Malik Willis lands with the Miami Dolphins, the original team that everybody assigned him to before all the Cardinals buzz started. It is where he ends up going. 3-year deal, $67.5 million, $45 million guaranteed. Pretty decent APY, just under $23 million. So Malik Willis is going to be the starter for the Miami Dolphins this year. I don't know, Boone. I think this looks pretty fun on paper.
Yeah, for sure. And I think he has a chance to be a low-end QB1 with the rushing ability. We've seen worse quarterbacks who can run get out there and actually put up top 12 stats for fantasy. So that definitely possible within his range of outcomes. But I go back to what I said on the free agency preview show a couple weeks ago, Harmon, which is the real concern now is Jalen Waddle. Like, how far is he moving down the rankings? Because the volume is not going to be there when you have Willis under center. And I brought it up on that show that he had 3 starts over the last 2 years, had 14 pass attempts in one game, 19 in another, and 21 in another. This is not going to be a high volume passing attack. And if it is, I don't think that's going to be very good either. I don't think Willis is that kind of quarterback. So I think this really hurts Waddle's outlook for fantasy. Think about Devon Achane and how much of his fantasy stock the last couple of years has come from not just being in the Mike McDaniel system, but also catching a ton of passes. Is he going to get that much work in the passing game? Not sure about that. So I think we're bumping him down a bit as well. So while this gives Malik Willis a chance to start and potentially even be a fantasy value and a guy who could be in fantasy lineups all year long, I think the bigger concern is for the pieces that are around him and whether their ceilings are now limited a little more, which I think they are.
I think in terms of the pass volume thing, probably see him average more than, you know, 14 or 20 attempts or something like that now that he's the actual starter, right? As opposed to he's got to start in place of Jordan Love in a pinch. But yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to be one of the most voluminous passing games in the NFL. What do the other pass catchers look like in Miami? I mean, because we've seen sometimes for these like run heavy quarterbacks, if you're on a lot of RPOs, like that first read player ends up dominating the targets, which is going to be Jalen Waddle. I think your point about Achane, though, is really interesting. Like, Achane's awesome. They're probably going to keep a lot of the same offensive tenants around in Miami because they promoted Bobby Slowick from within and he was there last year. So I don't think he's going to come in here and just change a bunch of stuff necessarily. But yeah, like Tua, who we're going to talk about in just a second, having that like real quick trigger finger to just check it down, those little stupid swing passes to Devon Achane, which are great if you just refresh the fantasy box score. Not very fun to watch, though, and did not lead to a lot of good offense in Miami the last couple of years. I wonder if that's probably not a consensus opinion, but I do wonder if he's like maybe, I don't want to call him a loser out of this, but he's definitely going to have to make up some of that passing volume with like elite rushing efficiency, which to be fair, could certainly be the case in the same backfield as Malik Willis. Like, that's going to be a tough duo to defend.
Yeah. And I believe if I heard correctly there, you were equating. So Bobby Slowick equal to Mike McDaniel in terms of offensive coordinator, offensive mind, a play caller. Is that what I heard there? Is that correct?
No. I said he was on the staff last year. Probably not going to come in here and change too much.
I think that's going to be a downgrade. You know, still concerns about the offensive line there. I don't know. In Miami, I'm a little bit worried overall, other than the fact that I do think it's going to be cool that Willis is going to get a chance and that he might be, you know, this year's backup turn starter, who is a really exciting story, even if it isn't the best for the players around him.
Speaking of not the best, Tua leaves Miami. He's released. They're going to take his dead cap hit on the chin, and he lands with the Atlanta Falcons on the 1 year minimum. So listen, I'm not going to crush the Falcons because it's a 1 year, like they're spending nothing on Tua, $1.3 million. Yeah. They're spending the minimum because of the offset language, but I don't know. I feel like Boone, most of the sell job I've seen on this is, well, he's left-handed, so you don't have to change the whole offense around because Michael Penix is also stop laughing. Michael Penix is also left-handed. Also, Kevin Stefanski really loved Dylan Gabriel, who was left-handed. Does Kevin Stefanski got like a left-handed quarterback thing that I don't know about? Like what's going on here? Anyways, so I just like I don't know. I'm laughing here. Maybe there's some truth by the way. I think there is some truth from like the left-handed, it is going to help you out to keep that the same. But it's just, it's not the most inspiring thing in the world to be like, we might start Tua if Michael Penix is not recovered from his injury in time.
Yeah. And though they throw with their left hands, like they're not exactly the same style of quarterback in terms of how they attack defenses.
They're so different.
And Tua, like the guy that we've seen the last couple of years isn't even the same guy that I think came out like of college. Like he now is a player who like is turning the ball over like crazy. Like, and there's been injuries and things that maybe affected him along the way, maybe confidence, all those sorts of things. But yeah, in terms of having like an insurance policy and he might start the year while Penix is recovering from injury, fine. But yeah, this is not very exciting for this offense at all. I would still say that Penix has a higher ceiling, so hopefully he can get right and hopefully he can step up and take this job and eventually develop into the quarterback they hope they were getting when they drafted him as high as they did. But this to me just really seems like, and you could probably say the same about the Jets who we talked about, this to me really seems like they're just looking at next year and they're going to try to solve their quarterback problem next season. And these guys are not actually going to be the answer.
No. Yeah, I don't think so either. I don't really think there's like a big commitment from this group with Michael Penix, but we'll see about that. Yeah, I mean, again, from a Drake London standpoint, from some of these, like it could be worse than Tua. I get that. It's just very uninspiring. But from a fantasy standpoint, there wasn't going to be an inspiring answer walking through this door necessarily. So we'll see. Tua can get the ball out quick. He can work the middle of the field. That is where Drake London does his best work, which is really, I mean, for the most part, all we care about. Kyle Pitts and these guys, we'll see how that works out. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will talk through tight ends who actually have agreed in principle, sort of, kind of, to deals. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. Let's talk through tight ends here. We've only got four signings to really break into. Only one that I think might move the needle in fantasy here, Boone. Isaiah Likely signs with the New York Giants on a 3-year, $40 million deal. What do we got on Isaiah Likely following John Harbaugh to New York to go with the Giants?
I mean, I'm really interested to see what he can do. I feel like fantasy managers have been waiting for this one for so long, right? You thought the opportunity was going to come in Baltimore. Maybe a little bit concerning that they decided to give Mark Andrews another contract and keep the older tight end and not move on from Andrews and just let Likely take over there. Kind of strange that that's the way it worked out, but regardless, he's following his former coach who knows all about him and still elected to bring him with him to New York, and he's going to get a shot to be that number one guy in the offense. In a Giants offense that at least early next season, Malik Nabers coming off a serious injury. We mentioned earlier, Wandale Robinson's gone now. So you have Darius Slayton, you have Theo Johnson, their number two tight end, who now is going to get pushed way down for fantasy and really blocked from doing much. I think Likely could be an interesting piece and somebody that could sneak into that low end tight end one range that we always talk about. Like, it doesn't take that much to get into that area for fantasy. We see lots of tight end twos step up and get into that range if they have decent volume, if they have a decent touchdown total. So I think Likely has a chance to certainly do that. We saw him have some big games when he got opportunities in the past, though they were a little fewer and far between in recent years, right? And that's what starts to make you worried, that the longer they had him in Baltimore, they really didn't continue to give him more and more and more. They actually went back to Mark Andrews and leaned on Andrews more and eventually gave him the contract. So I'm excited. I'm interested to see what he can do as like a pass catching weapon in this offense, a guy that you can move around, but he still has a lot to prove. He hasn't done it yet. So he's getting the opportunity, and he's somebody that I think fantasy managers should be looking at as one of these late round picks that could potentially emerge as a meaningful fantasy tight end.
Oh yeah. I think that interesting is what I would call this signing, but do I think he's like going to really be a breakout tight end? Maybe he could be one of those guys, you know, second contract, second team. He becomes one of those players, but I'm really interested to see how they put this tight end room together. Like, are they committed to Theo Johnson as kind of the inline guy and Isaiah Likely is the move player? That'll be fascinating. I don't know that I loved some of Matt Nagy's stuff with two tight ends with the Kansas City Chiefs. That's always going to be hanging over every Giants thing to me. And yeah, Likely could be a guy that maybe goes down as more of a tease than a true like fantasy breakout this year, but somebody later in drafts that will be interesting to consider. I would guess that they're going to run a lot more 12 personnel if Isaiah Likely and Theo Johnson are the guys there. But then again, they might just not think that much of Theo Johnson either. He's a holdover from the old staff.
Well, and Jackson Dart, we saw it last year. We talked about it many times on the show. He seemed immediately like a guy that could elevate players around him, could make plays on the run, off script. I think that's something that Likely could do. Like, we saw it going all the way back to college. We saw him make plays like that. So definitely interesting. We'll see what happens. I think he'll be a value in fantasy drafts because there's so many decent tight ends at the top that there's really no reason to take him anywhere near the first 100 or maybe even 120 picks. So you're going to get him in the late rounds. It's not going to be that much of a risk. You throw him on your bench and you see how it works out.
Real quick, three other tight end signings here. Just I'll throw them to you in a grab bag. You tell me if any of this moves the needle for you. Cade Otton returns to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on a three-year deal. Charlie Kolar goes to the Los Angeles Chargers on a three-year deal, $24.3 million. I think that one's interesting, but not necessarily from a fantasy standpoint. And Travis Kelce goes back to the Chiefs, of course he does, on a one-year $12 million deal. Nobody thought he was going anywhere else. Any of those three guys, you got something you want to say before we throw to break here?
Yeah, I mean, real quick, Cade Otton's really only had his big games when there's been injuries in the receiving corps, so I don't think he's somebody that you need to look to for fantasy. Travis Kelce, certainly declining, but we've seen guys like Tony Gonzalez and Jason Witten, like the best tight ends, even when they get deep into their 30s, they're still valuable for fantasy. They can be like a low-end starter for you, but the upside isn't there any longer. So I'd rather chase a guy that has that upside rather than go with Kelce, who's a bit of a boring option at this point. And then Charlie Kolar, not for fantasy in terms of his fantasy production, but everything that they're doing on the Chargers right now, addressing the offensive line, bringing in Alec Ingold at fullback, this is all pointing towards Amarin Hampton having a massive season in 2026. So we're just continuing to push him up the board.
He's going to get the shot to do it. There's no question about that. I said this after the Kolar signing, that the Chargers last year were top five in terms of percentage of plays with three plus receivers on the field last year. It is very clear that's not going to be the case this year. They've got Kolar to pair with the Rondé Gadsden. And, you know, there's been some discourse and debate on fantasy Twitter about how much does this move the needle for Gadsden. Gadsden, I think, is going to still be on the field a decent amount. He will be the guy that leads the team in routes at the tight end position, but he certainly is more of like a pass catching tight end than a blocker. Kolar is more the blocker. They bring in Ingold, as you mentioned. Quentin Johnson maybe on the trade block. Jeremy Fowler of ESPN reported he might be on the trade block. We'll see. I don't expect them to make another big receiver addition. I think they're probably going to be fine with Ladd McConkey and then a rotation of the younger players on the roster. Around Ladd's obviously a young player as well, but I don't expect them to make another big addition there. I think it's going to be a very heavy personnel package team. So that's like the big fantasy takeaway from the Kolar ad. Not that he is going to be somebody who puts up fantasy points in his own right. That is going to do it for us on the Yahoo Sports Network. We're going to take our final break of the show. We're going to keep going, though, here on YouTube and hit on the running back landing spots. We're going to get into that right after this. All right, we're back. Let's talk through running back free agents here. And we got some big ones, starting with Oh, Boone, your boy Kenneth Walker going to Kansas City on a 3-year, $43 million deal, up to 45, $28.7 million guaranteed. I mean, you got to be pretty excited about this. If you are a true Kenneth Walker bro, he's going to Kansas City. They need some explosion in the run game. For all of his flaws, he brings explosive play ability. How high are you ranking Kenneth Walker as a result of this? 1.01 or 1.02?
Well, I mean, it's hard not to be excited about this one, but yes, it is funny that he did wait until the fantasy season was over and then decided to completely go off. Yeah, real great. Really appreciated that. But this was one of the best landing spots for a running back. And I think people were kind of wish casting that he could be the guy that ended up going there. It ended up happening. And now I think for fantasy, we're going to see everyone debate it all offseason long. And I don't think there's much to debate here. I think this is just an obvious pick, a guy that you're going to want, a guy to target now in the second round. I feel like that's where he's going to go. That's where I'm going to have him ranked. And this just completely solves all the problems that have been in this rushing attack. They haven't had explosive runs. They haven't had a great rushing attack by any means. Like, in terms of yardage, you look at the rushing yards the last few years, it's just continuously gone down from 19th in the league to 22nd to 25th this past season in rushing yards overall. And now they finally have that guy who isn't this mix of Isaiah Pacheco and Kareem Hunt and whoever else they've tried to throw out there the last few years. This is a player who can elevate this rushing attack by himself, can make big plays and actually take advantage of some of the holes that that offensive line is making for him. I think this is fantastic, and he's not going to have any sort of competition like he had in Seattle and Zach Charbonnet. There's nobody else on this roster that's going to really threaten him. They have Breshard Smith and no one. So I think that they'll probably draft somebody or sign someone else, but there's not really anyone else on the market that's going to move the needle that much. I think Kenneth Walker is going to blow up here. I think he's got a shot to be a true RB1 in fantasy, just like we thought that he was going to do last year, just like he was the year before on a per game basis in Seattle. I think he's going to get a shot to finally do that this year. Though I will say, you're joking about being the top running back. He doesn't have even, like, I would say top five running back potential, because I don't think he's ever going to get enough pass attempt. Like, he's just not going to get the ball in the passing game that much like those guys do at the top, but still.
Yeah.
Locked in my mind as a top 12 and maybe even top 10 guy.
I will say, I mean, he's pretty good in the screen game. We saw that during the playoff run for the Seattle Seahawks. And this is obviously a team that loves throwing screens, and they just really haven't had a back to do that the last few years. So
he has the skill set. Yeah. I just don't think the volume will be there. I don't think they're going to use him that way. Like, no one's really used him that way, even though I agree. Like, I think his high is 46 receptions, I think, was his high. Just trying to pull that off the top of my head. But yeah, I think he's a player who still has immense upside as that, you know, home run guy, as that player who's now going to get the goal line work there. Very, very excited. And I don't think there's any reason to talk yourself out of it.
No, I think you're probably trying to galaxy brain it to spin this anything as a huge win for Kenneth Walker in fantasy. Very excited to see, like, what this offense looks like with an explosive run game. It is something that they desperately needed. Still need to do more on this offense, but getting a running back like Kenneth Walker is a big win for Kansas City. Tyler Allgeier goes to the Arizona Cardinals on a 2-year, $12.25 million contract. He pairs up with James Conner, who they are bringing back. That's Trey Benson. Nice knowing you. Don't think that one's going to happen there. And it's interesting. Like, there's some overlap in Tyler Allgeier and James Conner's games as, like, rugged, tough runners. I don't think they're completely similar players, but, you know, Boone, Mike LaFleur coming from the Rams, where they loved having two backs who were basically, like, very similar players, and Blake Corum and Kyren Williams. They thought that that was more of an advantage than having two guys who was like a tell when they were on the field. I think that's probably the goal here. James Conner, Tyler Allgeier, as kind of just mix match type of players in this backfield. So it's a pretty cool spot, I think, for Tyler Allgeier, who deserves a shot at being probably not a true starter, but like a 1A in the backfield with James Conner older and coming off another injury.
Yeah, and we've talked about it. You go back to the rookie season, he went over 1,000 yards. Like, he showed he can be a competent starter in the NFL. And yet, man, this one seems very muddled, right? Do we think Benson's just completely out of the way and it's only going to be Conner and him? Maybe. I just wonder, right? I wonder how this is going to play out. I think Algier will be the lead. I have him ranked the highest. And yet he still, for me, is just in that range of, like, you know, RB3 kind of guy. Maybe we see him do a little more if Connor gets hurt, which is an issue that Connor's dealt with. But I don't know, man. I'm worried about this one just being kind of a very difficult backfield to figure out week to week where they're splitting. And this isn't going to be the Rams offense. Like, this isn't going to be the success that the Rams offense has had. This is the Cardinals, you know, different offensive line. It's going to be a concern, I think, in terms of the overall outlook for these guys. And when you talk about players who, you know, need that pass catching upside, Algier doesn't have any of that. So you're not going to get his value boosted in that way. So you're really hoping that he's going to be that kind of early down grinder, you know, give you 60, 70 yards, hopefully finds the end zone. To me, it's just RB3 value right now, barring some sort of injury, kind of clearing the path for even more volume.
Not to mention, probably one of the most bizarre signings on the first day of free agency was the Cardinals signing Gardner Minshew, which right now the reports is just it's going to be Jacoby Brissett's the starter and Gardner Minshew's the backup, which, like, damn, you're going to come out and say, I mean, I know it's just like people reporting what they're thinking. I don't think that that's like for sure what's going to happen. I think there could be another move here coming for Arizona, but, like, man, you're setting the fan base up for that on March 9th. Like, we're just going to have Jacoby Brissett and Gardner Minshew start all year. I don't know. Especially because Minshew doesn't have any, at least, I don't know. I got to go through the full coaching staff, but it's not like he's got connections to LaFleur or connections to even Nathaniel Hackett or, you know, friggin' Monty Austin-Ford. I don't think there's anything there. So just really weird that would
Cardinals
be
fans the start- guy. Start learning the quarterbacks in the 2027 draft. I think that's what they should do. Don't worry about watching the games this year. Just get excited about the draft class in 2027.
I want to be, like, interested in this Cardinals offense because I like LaFleur and I like the pass catchers, but that makes me pretty uninterested if, like, Gardner Minshew is going to be starting any significant level of games for them this year. Travis Etienne goes to the New Orleans Saints on a 4-year, $52 million deal. I feel like, Boone, people didn't like this one. I kind of dig this signing for Travis Etienne, mostly because I think Alvin Kamara is going to retire. They restructured his contract in a way that, like, would help the team get some salary cap relief or, like, dead money relief if he does indeed retire. He talked about drinking pina coladas in the middle of last year if he was traded. When you're starting to talk about drinking, you know, booze drinks on the beach, like, you probably are going to retire. So I don't think Kamara's on this team next year. And I think Travis Etienne, this is a signal that he won't be on the team next year. So I like his fit with Kellen Moore's offense. I think he's going to, if people hate this one, I could see myself being pretty interested in Etienne as a fantasy pick behind a pretty good offensive line. They added David Edwards in free agency as well.
One of the things we talked about in the free agency preview show when it came to Etienne is the fact that I think a lot of his success in this bounce back year that just happened, where he finishes a top 10 fantasy back in points per game, a lot of it, I think, was attributed to Liam Cohen showing up and kind of revamping that offense entirely and helping out that rushing attack. I was worried that he was going to go somewhere that, you know, he might not have that kind of benefit. But Kellen Moore, we saw he had a great season there last year, right? He got a ton out of those players, even though it wasn't a winning team by any means. I think this is good for Travis Etienne. It's bad for everybody else. Like, if you're hoping that Kendre Miller was going to come through, which I will admit I still was on some teams, don't think that's going to happen now because you're watching the team go out and invest in the position. Devin Neal had some moments last season. Nope, this guy is just a depth piece and a backup. And then, like you said, Kamara, I mean, we saw the signs on the wall last year where he was not the same player. He was not producing in the same way. So it wouldn't be shocking at all if he walks away. But yeah, this is a decent spot and a decent offense. I feel like this is going to be the offense of the show. I feel like we're going to talk about the Saints constantly. I mean, we already have Tyler Shuck, Chris Olave. Watch them go out now and draft a receiver early because there was talk that they could potentially be in the mix for Jeremiah Love. Now they don't need to be. And you could look at other teams like Kenneth Walker going to the Chiefs, right? They're out of the mix now too. So where's Jeremiah Love going to go? I wonder if those teams already saw the writing on the wall and figured, like, okay, he's not even going to make it to us, so we better go invest in the position because it's going to be a team like the Titans or the Commanders, or I certainly hope not the Giants, but one of these other teams that are picking ahead of them, maybe they're going to take Love, and that's why these other teams that are picking in the back half of the top 10 maybe that's why they went out and invested at the position. But yeah, I think I'm looking at Travis Etienne as a pretty solid RB2 in this offense and a guy that could have another good season. Not, you know, top 10 on average like he was last year, but a guy who could still definitely produce and who you're going to feel good about having in your lineup.
I think you nailed that in terms of the Jeremiah Love ripple effect here, in that I think especially the Chiefs and the Saints probably saw the writing on the wall that like he's not going to make it to their pick, because just from folks, you know, talking like draft analysts and everything, it doesn't seem like this is the strongest draft class in the world. So if you're, you know, I know you said the Giants, like you don't want this to happen, but if you're a general manager like Joe Shane, who's already been kind of relegated to the number two decision maker there behind John Harbaugh, like not the face of the program, you need to come up here and hit, you know, on a draft pick, and it's like not that great of a class. Just go ahead and take one of the best players in the draft who's going to be good. Even if it's not good use of resource to take a running back fifth overall, whatever, you can have that debate. But like, just get up there and take a good player, a guy that the fan base is going to love really quickly, the whole deal. I could get that. To me, though, he's not getting past Washington at 7. Like, if he's on the board with the Commanders at the 7th pick, they're taking Jeremiah Love, and you can write that down in pen at this point. I just don't know if he's going to make it there or not. But yeah, that's the ripple effect here, is that he is not going to, I think, fall past Washington if he makes it to Washington's pick at all.
Yeah, fantasy managers that have Cam Scataboo, fantasy managers that have Ja'Cory Kraski-Merritt, they are going to be on the edge of their seat watching that draft to see where he ends up. Because somebody, like right now, I talked before about how I'm writing up the risers and fallers. Right now, I'm looking at those two guys and Scataboo and JCM as risers, but it's like risers for now. There's like that little asterisk, that little caveat there that they still got to survive the draft. But the fact that they so far have made it through free agency without having one of the big names end up in their backfield, that's a positive for them. I think Scataboo probably has a better shot to be the starter in New York than JCM does to have to be the starter for the Commanders next year. But still, we're going to be watching very closely to see what those teams do, because they need help. The Commanders definitely need somebody, whether that's a guy like Rashad White, who's still on the market, or someone else. Like, they need to add some pieces to that backfield. They can't just go into next season with JCM as the guy.
All right, I'm going to throw these last four at you as a grab bag here, and you tell me if one really stands out that's changed your rankings on a player or not. Kenny Gainwell goes to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on a two-year deal, essentially replaces Rashad White in that backfield, who, as you mentioned, is unsigned as of now. J.K. Dobbins returns to the Denver Broncos on a two-year deal. Rico Dowdle reunites with Mike McCarthy, who he was with in Dallas, on a two-year deal with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And then Isaiah Pacheco goes to the Detroit Lions on a contract that's yet to be announced, so it's probably not a very expensive one-year deal. I don't think Boone, I'll just give you one quick takeaway here, I don't think the guy who lost his goal line role to a senior citizen in Kareem Hunt is going to be threatening Jahmyr Gibbs's work at the goal line, who's certainly getting a boost with Dave Montgomery out of town. That's just my initial read on the Isaiah Pacheco signing. But any of those four moves really change your mind on a player, either one of these guys or somebody on those rosters?
But even if Pacheco does come in and take over the David Montgomery role, David Montgomery's role is not what it was a couple years ago, right? Like, no, David Montgomery was, you know, outside of the top 30 fantasy backs. His role had been reduced in the last couple seasons. Gibbs was taking over. So this is almost like best case scenario for Gibbs, because they were certainly going to add somebody else. So why not Pacheco, who is not really that much of a threat? I still think this is great for Gibbs, though. If you're going to break ties at the top of draft boards, you're going Bijan Robinson over Gibbs. I always had it that way, but this confirms it. He is more competition for Gibbs than right now Bijan Robinson's dealing with. If we look at these names here, I think the Gainwell one was a little disappointing to me, because I thought Bucky Irving had a chance to maybe rebound from this like injury plague season that he had this year, come back, potentially be an RB1 in fantasy, which he's shown over stretches that he can do. And yet now you bring in Gainwell, who had a great season with the Steelers last year, mm-hmm. who just fits perfectly what they want there as a pass catching option and a guy that could be that complimentary back and really like an overqualified backup and an overqualified change of pace, who's certainly going to work in a bunch and take some off the top for Bucky Irving. So that bumps Irving back down into the RB2 range. Maybe I was aggressive by putting him up into the top 12, but he has to fall back down now that we see a guy like Gainwell there. I think the other thing I'll say is Dobbins going to Denver. I think a lot of people are looking at that as like a really bad thing for RJ Harvey. I'm going to take the discount. I think we're going to see Dobbins back there. People are going to remember what happened early last season when Dobbins was the guy. And I'm going to continue to remind people about the fact that J.K. Dobbins has never finished an NFL season in its entirety. He always gets hurt. So R.J. Harvey, I think we could see something similar play out, because Dobbins, the last couple seasons, whether it was with the Chargers, whether it was with the Broncos last year, he gets off to these strong starts and then he misses time. And last year we saw Harvey play very well down the stretch. The RB9 in fantasy points per game once he took over the starting job after Dobbins got hurt. So grab Harvey. Think about, you know, when you want these guys to be in your lineup, the most important times of the fantasy season. And if you do take Dobbins, if you get some sort of discount on him and you want to draft him, please, if he starts hot in the opening month, try to trade him away. Get him off your roster. Take whatever you can for him, because the odds are just against him entirely that he is going to be able to make it through a season. I hope it happens. I really hope we see him do it one time, but I don't think it's going to be the case. I think it's unlikely. So I will still be taking Harvey, even though he is going to have to split early in the season. And I think this is almost a positive for him, because they could have gone out and got a Kenneth Walker, a Travis Etienne, or somebody that would have commanded more of a role all year long. I don't think Dobbins is going to be able to do that.
Which I think they wanted to get somebody in that range. They just were either priced out, or like with the Dave Montgomery thing, the Texans gave up more than them. So I do think that's still, like, it's not the best news for RJ Harvey, but I agree with you that it could have been worse if they had, signed like a Travis Etienne. I think it would have been over for Harvey, but now he just has the power to, if he's better as a rusher in year two than he was in year one, which maybe he will be, maybe he won't be, then he has the chance to really capture a true, more featured role than what we saw last year. But yeah, Dobbins definitely gives them some insurance there in the early months of the season if that does not happen. Just going to run through some offensive line signings here that really matter, I think, from a fantasy standpoint, starting with Tyler Linderbaum landing with the New Orleans Saints on a massive 3-year, $81 million contract, $60 million guaranteed. This one, you rarely want to say, like, hey, a team's got to go into free agency and they've got to make this happen. This one kind of felt like the Raiders needed to make this one happen, because Linderbaum's a perfect fit in Kubiak's zone-heavy offense. They need to start with a foundation piece on the offensive line. So the Raiders spent a lot of money in free agency, a just absolute ton here. I think they've spent the most so far. This is a big part of it, but even if they've kind of overpaid for Linderbaum, it's going to help them get better in year one with Fernando Mendoza and Clint Kubiak. So I do think that matters a lot for Ashton Jeanty and the guys on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, last year in that really bad environment, Ashton Jeanty was still the RB17 in fantasy points per game, still had over 1,300 yards, 10 touchdowns. Now you get the offensive line help. Now you get Kubiak there. Now you get Fernando Mendoza as the quarterback. Like, things are definitely looking up. And he is a guy that has top five fantasy upside at his position. So, yeah, this is great news for him. Almost couldn't have gone better in terms of how things have played out so far in free agency for Jeanty.
The other four offensive linemen signings, just to touch on real quick, David Edwards lands with the New Orleans Saints on a 4-year deal. They kind of just had to lock down one of those guard spots. Otherwise, it's a pretty underrated offensive line there in New Orleans. Again, Boone is right. We're going to talk about the Saints way too much in the offseason on this show. I think I mentioned this on at the combine. I was having dinner with Nate, and we ran into some people with the Saints. And, you know, I said, I was like, we talk a lot about your offense on the show. And I think maybe even they were surprised by that. So that's how it's going to be this offseason with the Saints. Zion Johnson goes to the Browns on a 3-year deal. Not a perfect player, but they just were completely remaking their offensive line. So, you know, they just need bodies on that line. Credible humans to start. Zion Johnson was better in the back half of last year, so definitely a credible human to start on the offensive line. Braden Smith goes to the Texans. We know they are still looking to rebuild their offensive line. And Elijah Vera Tucker, real big boom bust swing by the Patriots here. Elijah Vera Tucker is a damn good player when he's healthy. 3-year deal to go to the New England Patriots, worth up to $48 million. He's just very rarely healthy. So he's probably going to come and start at left guard, and they kick Jared Wilson to center. So we should see a pretty good situation there if he can stay healthy. But any of those four offensive line moves really stand out to you as potentially a needle mover for the offense?
I think the one to make sure that people are highlighting is just the changes that have happened on that Browns offensive line, because we've seen them have success at times, especially the running backs there, Quinshon Judkins early last season. But like you said, That offensive line is completely getting remodeled this year. They lost a bunch of guys. Yes, Johnson's coming back in, but that's something to keep in mind. Not that we're overly excited about the Browns offense to begin with, but the fact that that offensive line is losing so many pieces versus what they had last year or even a couple years ago, I think that's important in terms of just how we're going to project that offense. It's going to have an impact, no doubt.
No doubt about it. All right, Boone, we did it. We covered every, I think for the most part, pretty much every relevant big name to some. We've even talked Jahan Dotson on this show. Okay, we talked Jalen Naylor on this show. We talked through every big name relevant offensive signing here in the first 2 days of NFL free agency. So hell of a show, brother. Appreciate you doing it as always.
Yeah, man. And like I said at the top of the show, so much content coming out over at Yahoo between us, Joel, everybody's putting stuff out. So go check out all the content over there. And, you know, come find me on X at Justin Boone. I'll be tweeting it out there as well.
Oh, what a guy. This guy is always working. He's sick and he's right back to the grind, baby. You got to love Justin Boone there. We haven't even had a chance to talk with the DJ Moore trade. We will get to that in a future episode, Boone. We've got a lot to break down. That's why
for sure.
The show never stops. The offseason, there's no such thing. It's just the non-playing season. And on that note, we are going to be back. This show will be back on Thursday. Fantasy winners and losers and any other cleanup news that you might need here from free agency. That's going to be with Chris Allen and myself on this YouTube channel at 2 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. Until then, we are out.